All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio for this Tuesday, November 29th. I'm Pat Kreitlow, along with Aaron Zomers. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, Hans Breitenmoser will visit with us as well. To reach us, send us an email, radio@upnorthnewswi.com or phone 715-388-7155. I haven't really solicited for much in terms of input today, except to say that Aaron Rodgers is saying he could conceivably come back in time to play the Bears next weekend, but would you let him or would you sit him and say, you know, why don't you just get perfectly healthy for next season since we're paying you a lot of money? Would you just stick with Jordan Love for the rest of the season, or would you say if Rodgers is ready, put him back in? So if you want to talk about that or any other thing that's on your mind today, 715-388-7155. And of course, you can follow what our team does on social media. Just look for Up North News WI. Don't forget the WI. We come out of Cyber Monday, which means about as much to me as Black Friday. I don't really focus on either one of those a lot. And as I told you yesterday, my one experience with online shopping over the weekend, I actually fell for a Google ad and got something from a different website than what I was intending to. So I'm probably not the best person, Aaron, to talk about Cyber Monday, but do you, your roommates or others, was yesterday any kind of a big online shopping day?
Not really. They used to be different, Black Friday and Cyber Monday, but now it's all been folded into like 2 weeks long. Some people call it Cyber Weekend or Black Friday Week or whatever. But I know when I was in like middle school and then a little bit in high school, on Cyber Monday, there were really good sales on computer components. Some of my friends and I took advantage of that to like upgrade computers and stuff. But now it's the same sales anytime during these few weeks.
Well, yeah, because again, with more retailers, online, there's no reason to revolve around a single day. Everybody wants to try to upstage one another. So I suppose I haven't seen any statistics about it, but for any of you that might've been shopping that day yesterday, hope it was plentiful. Hope the deals were good and you're that much closer to having all your holiday shopping done. Speaking of holiday events, for this, you have to go decidedly non-cyber, way, way back non-cyber. On our website right now, you can learn about Christmas at Old World Wisconsin. It's a new feature from contributing writer Susan Lampert-Smith on how the historical site in Eagle in Waukesha County is marking home for the holidays this coming weekend, and then again the following weekend, December 10th and 11th. Susan writes, with sleigh bells jingling, carols ringing out from the old St. Peter's Church, and wood smoke curling up from the chimneys, there probably isn't a more evocative spot to get in the holiday spirit than Old World Wisconsin. Visitors can see a Victorian-era Santa in his workshop full of antique toys. No red and white for this jolly fellow. He's clad in the fur robes that were the style in his day. In the living quarters behind the store, Jennifer Young will show visitors how to shape a traditional braided Christmas bread served by Czech immigrants on St. Nicholas Day. And inside Old St. Peter's, built in 1839 as Milwaukee's first Catholic church, kids can make paper ornaments and decorate the tree. You can read much more from Susan in her story on our website. That's at upnorthnewswi.com. She has written a couple of times about Old World Wisconsin, a place where I have not been, Waukesha County being just a little too far from Lake Wissota for me to get down there and check things out. I've certainly heard a lot about it. I know that it's a prime focus of field trips. And so I guess bucket list maybe is too strong a word, but it is something I'd like to get to at some point, in part because of the stories that people like Susan do to tell us about the buildings that were moved from all parts of Wisconsin from back in the settlement era and now have found a home at that Waukesha County site. When veteran Republican State Senator Alberta Darling announced her retirement last week, a whole lot of us looked toward the one Democratic Assembly rep in that suburban Milwaukee district as someone who could possibly flip that seat. But State Representative Deb Andraca on Monday said thanks, but no thanks. She put out a statement saying that while she's grateful to everyone who's considered, who's encouraged her to consider running, she will not be a candidate. She cited the long battle to win the assembly seat in 2020, which was a flip to Democrats, and then the successful fight to prevent a supermajority in the assembly. And so she wants to spend some more non-campaign time with her family, especially her younger daughter, who will be leaving for college this fall. And nobody's going to begrudge State Representative Deb Andraca for making that choice. It is not, it's not exactly a swing district. It is, it has been trending more and more Democratic each election over the past decade or so, but it is still, I guess you would call it a heavily lean Republican district, maybe not a safe Republican district. So it would take a lot of work. If anybody could do it, it could be Deb Andraca, but surely there will be other Democrats who will consider it. And if you missed Alberta Darling's announcement last week, what you missed was her basically getting rid of the Republican supermajority that they had just won in the election. So the Republicans don't have a supermajority in the assembly. They had one in the Senate based on the election results that they now could, you know, impeach government officials and, you know, vote to override Governor Evers' vetoes. But with Alberta Darling stepping down shortly, there will not be that two-thirds majority, at least until a new senator is elected for that district. We'll be back with more. This is Up North News Radio. Welcome back. Quarter past the hour now on Up North News Radio. I talked in the last hour about the Waukesha County judge who is thinking about running for state Supreme Court and the background of her education, law school, and the thought that goes into mixing religion and politics. I want to get back to that in just a second. First, I want to pass along that while we're still awaiting the final numbers on the gun deer season, we do know from the Department of Natural Resources that there was a very successful elk hunting season. It was the state's fifth elk hunting season. It's a short one with only a few hunters. It opened October 15th. It closed October 19th. And all four state-licensed hunters filled their harvest authorizations. The DNR drew three of the hunters at random from a pool of 25,400 Wisconsin resident applicants, and then the fourth hunter was selected through a raffle drawing by the Wisconsin chapter of the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, a raffle drawing with over 1,600 entries. The fact that we are having an elk hunt is, again, a real feather in the cap of those who have tried to reintroduce elk to northern Wisconsin. I remember when the first elk was released, 1995, in the Clam Lake area. And we all wondered if that was going to work, if we would again see elk native to Wisconsin. Well, in 2022 now, the estimated population of the Clam Lake elk herd is 336 elk. So there is a lot to be said for being able to turn around progress in our natural resources. In this case, reintroducing the elk herd. Yes, it does get us into the topic of wolves and hunting and the population there. We're going to save that for another time. I wanted by comparison to take a look at Wisconsin and those four state-licensed deer hunters getting their elk versus Idaho, where my son-in-law is an elk hunting guide. And if I'm reading the stats correctly, it looks like 280 elk were harvested in Idaho by comparison. But again, you've got, you know, the Rocky Mountains at work for you, as opposed to, you know, just what we have here in the state of Wisconsin. So anyway, getting back to our subject about Judge Jennifer Doro, her education through Regent University, which is the law school formed by TV preacher Pat Robertson, and the things that they've said to advance the notion of, you know, a Christian perspective of law and what that would mean for somebody running for state Supreme Court. Tom is on the line from LA wanting to comment a bit more about, you know, this whole, I guess I would call, I don't want to exclude religion from politics. We all have our own value systems and whatnot, but, you know, where is that line? And I think Tom has some comments on that. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Pat. First off, we the people ultimately are the government, and we must never forget that. Second is that myself growing up in a small town in Wisconsin called Durand, you know, I learned from a nun named Sister Rita May that being a Christian means walking in the footsteps of Christ. It means doing as Christ would have done. And I am so disgusted by the hijacking of the word Christian that has been done by people that are not anything even close to the word Christian, that I think we need to either say, hey, look, I'm a follower of Christ, I'm not a Christian, or we need to do something, because these people are anti-Christ is really who they are, because they don't follow anything Christ said. Christ never said one word about LGBTQ anything. Christ said nothing about, you know, he's the one that said those that have sinned cast the first stone. I mean, he's the one that said the Beatitudes in terms of what's going on. Now, I'm not talking about the mixing of religion and politics, because honestly, I think it's at the detriment of both areas if you are mixing religion and politics, and that's why the founders wanted it that way. But if these people are going to go around and call themselves Christians, this is just, to me, it's blasphemy. It is blasphemy. We need to start calling them the Antichrist, because if they knew who the figure Christ really was, they would not be promoting hate. They would not be promoting, you know, not Medicare for all and Social Security and all these different things. Christ was someone that loved everyone, didn't judge anyone. At least my Christ that I studied in my Catholicism, you know, being brought up. I just want to get that out there and speak for people that are Christians. Just as an example, I am pro-life, but I am pro a woman's right to choose, not pro the government's right to choose. I don't think the government should tell a woman what she should do with her body either way. It is her choice, and the media keeps on calling it the abortion issue. It's not an abortion issue. It's a woman's second-class citizen issue is really what it is, because it's about choice and who's choosing. But I really want to get that out there, that we need to start pushing back, that they're the Antichrist. They are not Christian nationalists, because they have nothing to do with Christian.
Thank you, Tom. I appreciate that, because, you know, one of the things that naturally follows from that is that Wisconsin is overwhelmingly a state where the population believes in a woman's choice to do with her body, that she has control over what to do with her body. And yet this religious argument has finally held sway over enough right-wing justices on the Supreme Court espousing what they say are Judeo-Christian values, that have led us to this point where we are in our country's history. And to your point about people following in the footsteps of Jesus Christ, I don't want to make light of it, but I'm not wrong when I say that if a religious figure were to deliver the Beatitudes now, in this day and age, for the first time, Fox News would have a field day with it and say, who is this Jesus guy? What a socialist this guy is. And yet some of these same folks will go to church on Sunday and then serve in politics. And Mark in Prairie du Sac has some comments about, the mixing of religion and politics, which again shouldn't be confused with values in politics, but religion and politics then can come into play. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning. Yes, and you know, thanks to Tom there. That, and these people, I obviously have not held fealty to their oath because they seem to ignore the Constitution, which specifically prohibits religious tests, which specifically prohibits the establishment of a religion in this country, and they just don't seem to understand because they think that. And the founders were clearly, you know, Madison had written extensively on that. He didn't want that connection there, that because he was afraid of not only, you know, religious impacts on government, which they were more aware of with all the religious wars that had happened in Europe over religion, that but they didn't want religion corrupted by government or government corrupted by religion, and it is just and most of these people are, you know, seem to be, you know, that. They don't need to say, understand, you know, clear and simple English. You know, for example, you know, a little side point there. They don't understand the whole thing of contiguous and compact when it comes to districts in Wisconsin. That they, when they redistrict, you know, gerrymandered the entire state using, you know, political results to, you know, influence, you know, where the district lines were set, which is, you know, clearly, as my reading as a layperson. No, I didn't go to an online law school like, you know, the judge, you know, that going getting a degree from Blood Diamonds Pat Robertson's university there. That, but I can actually understand the clear and simple English of the, not of the U.S. Constitution, but the Wisconsin Constitution. And clearly, these people, they don't care. They think that they are, that it is a. Maybe it's my misunderstanding, and that, but a very Calvinistic attitude of that, a dominionist attitude of, you know, that we are in power now because we are blessed by God, and therefore we know everything, and we can tell you what to do, and which is clearly what, you know, Tom had alluded to, is what Jesus protested against. I mean, Jesus said we're supposed to obey the civil authorities, and that, and pay our taxes, and do right by one another. But these guys seem to think that they are, you know, beyond reproach because they can say, oh, you know, look how holy we are, and we're supposed to just accept that, and they simply are not. They're delusional if they think that they're that way. I mean, it is just, well, we're supposed to be. There's other religions that actually preach, you know, kindness to your fellow man and honesty, and that is, it's the basis of most of the world's religions. That we're not supposed to lie when we're, you know, we're not supposed to lie. We're not supposed to take bribes. We're not supposed to be dishonest in our dealings. And
right. And let's not forget, Mark. I mean, there are plenty of people that you know, they're pastors and church leaders who do espouse those values and who do not practice politics from the pulpit. And so I you know, so we're being very careful here not to paint with too broad a brush, but. Some of us are also very tired of giving some people a free pass because they might be offended if we question the way they interpret their quote unquote Christian values by way of the politics that they practice. And this Dobbs decision, ripping away healthcare rights from women, is a prime example of that. Now, Judge Jennifer Doro from Waukesha County, who says she's thinking about running for the Supreme Court, wrote something about her judicial philosophy. And it included that a judge should give deference to the legislative policy considerations so long as the policymakers have stayed within their limits as defined by the constitutions. In the words of Justin Antonin Scalia, a judge should interpret the text reasonably to contain all that it fairly means. And again, from, you know, the letter that she wrote to Governor Walker talking about her, quote, strong conservative values and citing Justice Scalia and her choice to go to law school at Regent University, founded by Pat Robertson. These are all things that people should know, not simply that she did a good job presiding over one case, because there's been no shortage of judges who talked about their conservative values when they were nominees, but they also said Roe v. Wade was settled law. They all but made a blood oath that they would do nothing to tear away the right to privacy and the right to healthcare decisions that women have had through the Constitution as interpreted by the Supreme Court for half a century. And it turned out they lied. How Christian is that? To say that you have these values, but then the moment that it's politically convenient for you, you suddenly find a path toward doing the thing you said you wouldn't do. Yes, I'm immediately thinking of Ron Johnson saying he wouldn't run for a third term. I don't want to go off on that tangent. But again, if you say so.
Follow Up North News online anytime. Search Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for Up North News WI and our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com.
Well, first, let me start by offering up apologies. I just took my eye off the ball, or in this case, the clock, and didn't get to finish my point about it being, you know, fair game to know what people are thinking, what's their personal philosophy coming into something. And we were talking about Waukesha County Judge Jennifer Morrow, Doro, who's thinking of running for state Supreme Court. And I did that off an interview she did with TMJ4, but apparently she's been making the rounds doing TV interviews. I see now she talked to WISN 12 News in Milwaukee as well, and has, you know, kept open the possibility of running for Supreme Court in the state, coming off of the Waukesha Christmas Parade trial. And I don't have the clip here to play for you, but I'm looking at the transcript, and Joyce Garbasiak asks her, did you always want to be a lawyer? And Doro says, no, I have a broadcast communication degree. I wanted to be in your spot at one point, meaning TV news. I just felt this pull toward law. And as they say, the rest is history. And she went to law school, the one formed by Pat Robertson, and now describes herself as a strong conservative justice. So again, there's definitely parallels with other Republican candidates of the past, shall we say. So again, the nominating papers process can start day after tomorrow. So we could expect any time now to find out if she's going to run or if she's going to not. And that leaves the conservative path open to Dan Kelly, who wants to run for state Supreme Court. Again, a former conservative justice who wants to get back on the seat after he was unseated by voters in 2020. It's worth saying so many times to be careful while we're out there, not just because of the usual seasonal reasons as we're waiting for the snow to start falling over here on Lake Wissota, but just for any reason, especially in a work zone. And it's sad to note that a utility worker has died after being struck by an SUV on a Sauk County highway. It was a 17-year-old driver and a 25-year-old utility worker. And the worker died Tuesday morning after being struck by an SUV while unloading equipment on a highway. This was on Highway 23 and was unloading equipment from a pickup truck that had been towing a utility trailer, but then was struck by the truck, and the 17-year-old driver remained on the scene and cooperated. The utility worker was pronounced dead at the scene. But again, just sadly, another reminder that these work zones are not wrapped up for the year yet. And frankly, anytime you see something over in the shoulder of the road to try to get over, it's one of those rare bipartisan moments I had in the legislature. If you see those signs along the highway that say, you know, slow down, move over for emergency vehicles, part of the reason was that I had authored a bill to help codify that into state law. It actually was not explicitly mentioned in state law to, you know, move over and slow down for emergency vehicles in the shoulder. And so we basically just kind of strengthened the law and, you know, put up the signs as well. You would think we wouldn't have to do that, but again, it's just one of those things that some drivers need to be reminded of. And so we hope you'll be careful as you're doing that. Please be careful as well when you're getting together with your family. I know a lot of people came off of Thanksgiving dinner and were relieved to get through it unscathed, but not every family get together goes that well. And that's why in Tulsa, Oklahoma, police are investigating how a game of Monopoly turned violent and led to shooting. Apparently last Saturday evening, a family was playing Monopoly when a fight broke out between John Armstrong and his stepfather. After knocking over the Monopoly board and turning over furniture, another family member told Armstrong and his stepfather to take the fight outside. Well, they went outside. Armstrong pulled out a pistol and chased his stepfather and stepsister down the street at gunpoint, and Armstrong admits to firing one round. When officers arrived, they arrested Armstrong. They also found Monopoly money and game pieces scattered around the living room. Armstrong is charged with assault with a deadly weapon. And Aaron, what do you think police wrote in their Facebook post about the incident at the end?
Probably something about drugs and alcohol being involved. No,
yes, think Monopoly.
No. Do not pass go.
Armstrong won't be able to use his get out of jail free card for this one. All right, that was a good one for the police.
Definitely.
And the only reason that resonates with me is, and I hope Sherry doesn't mind me telling this story. God knows I've told it enough other times. That was actually the very first fight of our marriage, you know, some 36 years ago, sometime around maybe just under a year after we'd been married, and we decided to play Monopoly, just the two of us. And it's how we really came to understand the concept of house rules, you know, the way that one family plays it versus the way another family plays it. Like, you know, is there automatically $500 in the middle of the board, you know, so that if you, what is it? If you roll doubles or something, you get the money that's in there or not. And also, you know, playing strategy. Some people try to, you know, build big on one or two properties. Others try to scatter their houses and hotels on many properties around the board. They're supposed to be wheeling and dealing of properties so that people can get monopolies in order to build houses and hotels. And we learned that there was a real difference there in a very spirited way. And I remember how surreal it felt at the time. I'm like, is this really the first fight of our marriage is over what the Monopoly rule should be? And to this day, we have not played it since. Not that we're not grown-ups now and can handle these things maturely, but why tempt fate? So we don't. We have played, I would venture thousands of games of cribbage in that time. And not once did we ever have a fight about strategy or house rules or anything like that, Aaron. Monopoly can be dangerous.
Yeah, something about that little round mustached man just ticks people off. It really riles people up. I'm not sure. Like, there's plenty of other games where you can be meaner to each other. But I think Monopoly, between the different house rules and the likelihood of the game going super long, like multiple hours.
Oh my gosh.
People just get so invested. On.
It does. It can go on. Now, fortunately for me, our eldest daughter loves Monopoly. But we were mercilessly teased because when we had a Nintendo Wii back in the day, while other people did, you know, those very active games, you know, where you would play baseball or bowling or, you know, dance or whatever, my daughter and I would play Monopoly on the Wii. So you're just sitting there like a lump on the couch, pressing a button to shake the dice, pressing a button to buy a property. We were constantly asked, why don't you just open up the board game? But, you know, it's on TV. It's on your big screen.
It's colorful. Easier.
Good graphics. It's pretty. So that's where we played and had very few fights about that. And none of them involved gunplay, that I'm happy to say. We were going to be joined in this segment by Hans Breitenmoser up in Lincoln County, being a farmer. And as he's told us many times, having internet that was sometimes sketchy. We haven't seen him yet, but we'll certainly hope to talk to him at some point here really soon. One of the things that we were going to talk about are all the referendum questions that were on ballots. And by the way, I have to make an executive decision on this at some point, Aaron. I've been so used to saying referenda. Others say referendums. And I've tried to you know, thread the needle by saying referendum questions if I wanted to be plural. I think I'm just going to go ahead and say referendums and not worry about what Miss Wedge taught me at Battle Creek Junior High School in seventh grade. So if you are a referenda person, forgive me, but we're going to go with referendums, because it turns out that voters supported 85% of the referendums that involved municipal public safety. I'm reading this story from the Wisconsin Public Radio site. These referendums, as they write it, are becoming more common in the face of rising costs, stagnant state support, and limits imposed by the Wisconsin legislature on property tax increases. There were 20 public safety referendums on ballots in municipalities around Wisconsin. Voters approved 17 of the 20, asking voters for permission to raise property taxes to pay for a wide variety of government services like emergency medical staff, firefighters, and additional police officers. Here in Chippewa Falls, voters approved a $1.2 million property tax increase annually to hire three additional firefighters and one police officer. This is simply to underscore what we've been saying all along, that whatever you think of the slogan defund the police, and whatever you think of what that means, what is the definition of defund the police, if anything close to that is being done, it's being done by Republicans in the Wisconsin legislature, whose cruel and draconian austerity measures have squeezed local governments to the point where police are being defunded unless they greatly slash other equally essential services at the local level. It is so past time for this legislature to grow up and accept its responsibility to fund its share of services around the state, because only the state levies an income tax, which is more progressive, which is more fair, and instead wants property taxpayers to foot the bill. And that's something we're going to talk to Hans about. And Aaron, I see that I think I may have to give Hans a different link. I think he may have used our previous link, so that was the reason why. But obviously, I can't get that to him right now. But gotcha. I just wanted to mention that to you, and we'll see if maybe in the next commercial break I'll reach out to Hans and see if he wants to join us quickly. But it's something that, again, at the local level, these local governments, and you know, from big cities to smaller towns and villages and counties, every one of them is feeling the strain of this. Jerry DeShane is executive director for the League of Wisconsin Municipalities Advocacy Group. He says there have been 37 public safety referendums in the state this year, a number he describes as staggering. The fact that we're going to referendum over and over again means the system of finances is unsustainable. The system we use is broken. It needs to be reformulated. And yet, what do we hear from Republican legislators? We hear that, again, in exchange for them allowing cities or counties to levy an additional sales tax to fund these services, they may have to make other, you know, quote unquote reforms, which is another way of, you know, saying cutbacks in other areas. And it's just, it's untenable. It's unsustainable. And again, in a 50-50 state, Republicans control almost two thirds of both houses of the legislature, thanks to gerrymandering. So they, representing the minority, are able to impose these budget limits that are defunding the police, that are forcing property taxes up all around the state. And it's something that I'm sure we will talk about more after the first of the year, because this will be the first time we've had this radio show going in conjunction with a state budget bill being written. And I know as soon as I say state budget bill, we get, you know, from folks who are drifting off, but we're going to try to avoid that. And I don't mean avoid talking about the state budget. It's vitally important. but we'll try to put it in plain English so that folks understand that there's more to the state budget debate than cut my taxes, even though the party in control of the legislature seems to think that that is the centerpiece of anything regarding a state budget is, you know, just cut my taxes. No, we want you to fund vital services, and we want you to fund them fairly. And that can be done, but not through their current ideology. Back after this, this is Up North News Radio. It's 10 to 8 right now here on Lake Wissota. This is Up North News Radio. And if you normally see us on the video feed at our Up North News Facebook page or through Civic Media, and you see that my normal coffee mug has been replaced with a can of Coke Zero, it's because I always wanted to know this particular hotel that we stay at frequently on our travels, their coffee pods are never good. And I just wanted to see if that was, so I brought one of the pods home and I just used it in our coffee maker. And yeah, it's terrible. It just is. But anyway, we'll go with the Coke Zero for now, and we'll try a fresh cup of coffee tomorrow the way it's meant to be. Hans Breitenmoser is with us now, joining us from up in Lincoln County. Hans, it shows on my screen that you're muted right now, so you might have to hit a little button there as we say good morning.
Hey, good morning, Pat. How's it going?
Hey, it's going fine. Sorry for the confusion on the link to join us, but I'm glad you're here now, and we've got a couple of minutes yet to talk about how things are going up in the northern part of the state. You're not seeing snow yet up there, are you?
It's just starting.
Okay. All right. I haven't looked at the radar for a couple hours then. I knew it was on the doorstep, and now as I look outside, oh, there we go. The first very light snow is starting to come down over here too. I guess we can start playing Christmas music now.
Yes, by all means.
Now here's a question. Real tree or artificial tree over at the Breitenmoser farm?
Real tree. Our tradition is to go to a local tree farm and get one for our family, one for my mother, and one for my wife's parents.
Okay. All right. Just curious. I didn't know if you got that off of your own property or if you go someplace else. Glad you patronize someplace local there. Yeah. We were discussing in the last segment a little bit about the increasing amount of referendums for just simply for public safety, so that local units of government could provide their own essential services. And I wondered from your viewpoint up there in the Merrill area, you know, what can you tell us about the stress that county and local governments have been feeling after a decade of budget austerity from Republicans in the legislature?
Well, it doesn't work. It's a system that doesn't work. I was on the county board for 10 years. We were counting paper clips for most of those years. And now I'm no longer on the board. Our county board made a decision to get rid of a registration fee that the previous county boards had put in place. It was $20. None of my constituents complained about it. Every time I voted in favor of it, I did so holding my nose because I didn't think it was quite fair. But without shared revenue, we have to have a means by which we can pay the bills. So in our area specifically, our county board got rid of that quote wheel tax, and then realized that they didn't have, you know, $500,000 to work with, which was poor management, I think, on their part. But it is a symptom of just, you know, having the state sit on $5 or $6 billion and not use it for anything, and not you know, go into session and start making some decisions. So we actually look for next year's budget. We don't have extension in our county anymore. That's a real example of what happens when there's mismanagement at the state with regard to, you know, sharing funds with local entities, local units of government.
Well, I'm sure that there's some way that the UW Extension, which has been serving farmers and rural communities for over a century in this state, I'm sure there's some way that can be described as socialism. And that's what Republicans are using to justify, you know, making it so that counties can't even afford that anymore.
Well, it's just so sad and so silly. I just feel like a generation ago, we were able to do some of these things because people were willing to work together and use their heads and look at the greater good. But we're in a space right now where politics is everything all the time. And as such, you just don't get, good public policy. And now sitting on that surplus and not doing anything useful with it, and in fact, continuing to, you know, kind of screw over the counties is just shameful. It's just a shame.
Do you feel like more conservatives on county boards, and we can talk about other local units of government as well, but I'll stick to county boards, are realizing that they need to be more vocal about this? And what prompts the question is that healthcare referendum in Dunn County, where a conservative county board voted unanimously to put that healthcare referendum to voters because they know, as conservative county board members, that the current health insurance system is not working. It's unsustainable. Is there any chance that more conservatives on county boards will be appealing to their fellow conservatives on the legislature saying, you've gone too far, you've got to fix this? Or are they willing to accept that because that's the nature of their politics?
Boy, I don't know, Pat. That's a really good question, because I feel like we had both progressives and conservatives on the county board when I was on the county board in Lincoln County. I think that the majority of folks on the county board now are they fancy themselves conservatives. And I think too often they're just so wound up with, with the sort of party line, and, you know, it's just so worked up about this big lie, stolen election nonsense and so forth. They just can't see straight anymore. And so when they're faced with things like, you know, actual fiscal things that they should be, you know, talking to their conservative friends in Madison about, it's just not getting done. And so we're just so willing to make lousy decisions with this sort of ideological purity somehow. It's just so weird. The whole thing is just weird. I don't get it anymore.
I understand. Let's conclude with healthcare and rural healthcare. Senator Tammy Baldwin recently announced that the USDA is awarding $13 million in grants to improve healthcare facilities in rural locations across Wisconsin, including nearly $10 million to St. Joe's and Chippewa Falls, to help address the adverse effects of COVID-19 on their opioid substance alcohol use disorder treatment and recovery. Plenty of other places receiving funds as well. And Hans, I know we're kind of stating the obvious here, but, you know, rural healthcare is in a bad way right now, isn't it?
It sure is, Pat. I think I see what Baldwin has done, and I think it's all good. Getting those dollars back to rural local economies and to those programs and so forth. Some of it is to, you know, help get things back going to a pre-pandemic level and addressing some of the issues that came along because of the pandemic. But I think it's good. I'm glad to see those dollars come back. Those are dollars that are going to do good things in rural communities. And I think it's also important to remember that when those dollars come back, they're helping to provide the services, but they're also, you know, investing in infrastructure and so forth. And those are dollars that bounce around in our communities. So I think it's good stuff.
Yeah. Hans Breitenweiser, nice to talk to you. We'll do it again in a couple of weeks here. Thanks so much.
All right. Thanks a lot, Pat. Take care.
Have a great day. All right. Go have fun. Work hard. Play hard, everybody. Enjoy your Tuesday. We'll see you back here tomorrow, and you can follow what we're doing at Up North News WI, upnorthnewswi.com and socials, or follow me on Facebook. Just look for Pat Kreitlow, Up North. Have a great day.